The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on March 8, 2026. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you all. I do not believe in God. That's probably kind of a dangerous thing to say, because immediately I'm sure there's probably many things that could just take place in your mind, most of which will be probably that you didn't fully understand what I just said, even though it's pretty straightforward, not too complicated. But people would be, maybe you're thinking, oh, Steve's an atheist? And no, I'm not an atheist. Steve believes there's no God, yeah. And then maybe even Steve must be evil if he doesn't believe in God. Our minds will run away with notions and ideas like this. Pretty soon we're wondering all sorts of things. Ann and I had a meal out with some friends of ours a while back now, but it was at the time when the monks that were walking from, what was it, somewhere in Texas to Washington anyway, and they were in the news a lot. And they don't follow my life that closely, but they were aware that I practice here and teach and stuff. So they mentioned this about the monks, and what did I think of that? And I didn't really have too much to say. I didn't really think about it very much. But I did mention that. I said, well, I think they're Tibetan monks, aren't they? And then they seem very confused. And it's sort of like, you know, maybe they think I'm Catholic and I'm wondering about the Pope or something and not understanding, you know, that sort of thing. Not, of course, we would realize, well, there's all kinds of Christians, you know. But it was, and I've seen this before, I've run into it before with other people, where they think, well, the Buddhism is just one thing, and I suppose we're all under the Dalai Lama or whatever. People have ideas like that. And they could easily take some little thing that I might say and just run away with it and come up with all sorts of understandings about what I might have said there. So we got to talking about Buddhism a little bit. And then the woman we were with, there was another couple, but she said, well, I have some friends who would think you are evil, you know, because I was Buddhist. I don't think of myself as Buddhist either. But, you know, so some people would even think I'm evil. Why, they don't even know me. Why would they just immediately jump to that? Well, it's because, you know, if I believe there's no God, there must, you know, but I didn't say I believe there's no God. I didn't say anything about my beliefs, at least just now, and I didn't at the table there with him as well. Now, this is important. I'm kind of sensitive to this right now because I'm working on a book of Nagarjuna's works, while his major work, the Malumajambika Kurika, given many lectures on this in the past. But I thought this is one more project I think I would like to complete while I still have some time. I'm in my 80s now, so I have to start looking at it. Like, there's only so much time left to me now. And this is something I've been wanting to do for a long time. But in really looking at Nagarjuna now very closely, I've studied him for more than 50 years, but really looking into it very carefully, and I realize that almost with every word, people who read this pick this up and misunderstand. The subtlety of his teaching is such that it's easy to misunderstand what is really there, what he's presenting to us. Because we will so quickly take an idea and process it in our own way and think we understand, and then we'll react to that without carefully listening to what was said. And what I said in my opening statement here was, I didn't say anything about what I believe. I only said just one small point about what I don't believe, which is quite a bit. I don't believe, frankly, I would say that I don't hold beliefs at all anymore. But when you look at what it is that we do as human beings, we do believe, so easily believe. Most of us probably think it's very important to believe in something and to take hold of something and to carry this as though this were true, not even recognizing that, well, you didn't believe that 10 years ago. In fact, you probably believe the opposite of that 10 years ago, whatever it might be you're holding now. And we don't even realize this shift, even within our own minds, of all of this. And yet, we take this as something really, truly important. But look at the human world with all the fighting and the squabbling. You know, you think this and somebody else has a different view, and now you're clashing in the trouble that this causes. This is what's going on in the world today at large, starting up wars over there. It might not even really make any sense to anyone, including those who maybe begin it, because they have something else in mind, perhaps. But this is where we are with things, and it's from our grasped views. And this is very dangerous. As I was saying when I threw out that statement at the beginning, I said, this is probably pretty dangerous to say, because it looks like I'm throwing out a view there. When if you look at it very carefully, I didn't really throw out a view at all. I just pointed out something that I don't embrace. I don't hold this notion. I also don't hold the notion that there's no God. I do not believe that there's a God, but I could also say, and quite true, just as true, that I don't believe there's no God. So I'm not an atheist. I didn't say that I believe there's no God. I just pointed out that I don't believe that there is a God. So what do I think about that? Well, I really don't really think about it very much at all. As I said, I don't even really hold views at all, really. Well, aren't you a Buddhist? Well, I don't even. I've studied this way and practiced this way for many years now, most of my life, pretty much my full adult life. Well, maybe at one time, maybe I did think of myself as a Buddhist. I don't know. I don't even remember anymore. But there's no need for me or for you or any of us to hold ourselves in some particular way that I am this or that, or I want to become that, or be. Want people to think of me this way. I could put on the more fancy robes. I do have a few things like this. But I've went through all of that, and I've had all the training and all the, you know, all the peripheral stuff. But what has interested me in this way, this practice, and this teaching, is the freedom of mind that it is, that it brings us to, that it allows us to awaken to. But that awakening is not by acquiring something that we don't already have. We all have truth right now within ourselves and even in within our own minds. But the moment we grasp something, this is what it took me a while to learn, but that's what this teaching and this practice is about. To realize that when you grasp something, anything at all, you're now entering into a kind of an illusory world, in a delusional state. You know, now you might fight to hang on to this one or argue with other people about it or whatever. But this is where the human conflict and trouble and insanity and craziness, it never gets grounded. It's gone on for thousands of years with us, with different religions and philosophies ideas that we run by, all the while in a crazy world of human beings, the human world. It's very crazy most of the time. How many of us really can become truly sane and present with this? But that's what this practice is. Somehow I had a gut sense of this when I first encountered it, perhaps, and then have really come to realize that that's what this is about. And to take on to anything special or different or whatever, you know, is to just re-enter into this confusion that's going to get entangled in all kinds of human conflict and trouble and disturbances of mind that will never allow us to settle out and to wake up to what is really going on, even within our own minds, even. So that's what this way is. And I say, well, I don't hold any beliefs, but you might say, then, you know, I've kind of confessed it now, but I've been practicing in a very formal way for more than 50 years, this practice. So I must believe that meditation is good for you. I never teach this way. I never say this. Or that it'll bring you to enlightenment or something like this. And that's why we practice. You know, I must have a reason. Surely I have a reason to practice. I might have had some reasons or some sketchy ideas in my mind when I started this and first encountered it. Perhaps, I don't, yeah, I think so. But I've long ago come to realize that to practice with some idea like that and I'm going to gain something from this or get better in some way or stronger or, you know, more intelligent or whatever, maybe wisdom. Yeah, we talk about wisdom. You know, that I can gain this from this practice. And that's why, maybe you've assumed that's why, well, you probably don't think about me and what I'm practicing, but that's why one would do this. And then so to say that I've been doing this in a formal way since my early 20s, but even earlier than that, I was dabbling with meditation in various ways. But I was in my late 20s when I met my teacher, Katagiri, and after then, he practiced in a very formal way, in a steady way, day by day. He was always there, every sitting, morning and evening. If he wasn't in the Zendo, doing all the sessions, everything, all the time. So I started practicing that way. That's what he was doing, and that's what I began to do. And I've done it pretty much ever since, except now I can't keep up quite that. I don't have the energy now as an old guy. But still, that's what I did for the rest of my life. And I still do, as Dogen says, you know, Zazen, sitting meditation, has nothing to do with sitting or lying down. We can practice Zazen anytime. We can learn this and practice that. And I still continue to practice. But why do I do this? Do I have a reason? Long ago, if I had any reasons, I just dropped that. Because whatever you want to hold up there as a reason for doing meditation, carrying out this practice, it's going to get you embroiled and entangled and all kinds of things. People can counter it with other arguments against it and that sort of thing. And pretty soon you might discover that you're a little confused about this. It's not necessary that we do this. You know? Now, you might think that I've confessed that I don't know why I meditate. No, that's not true. There's full knowledge and understanding of here in what I experienced, that I know what's going on here. I know what this, I just practiced this. Not in a vague way. No, I know full well what this is. And I wouldn't trade it for any other way of life, really. But that comes with just carrying it on, taking it up, getting some ideas finally about what this is, something to believe in, something to hang, something to push onto other people and say you should do this or that and for these reasons or whatever. No, that's to engage in the human world here in our usual sort of way. Yeah, but this is good stuff, isn't it? Yeah, so, yeah, we do that with bad stuff too. And yeah, where we're trying to con people and get something from them and, you know, all of that. Yeah, it's the whole array of stuff like that. But it's all there, the whole thing. If you want to call this good and that bad or whatever. Yeah, but it's this whole thing that is taking place in the human world of confusion. This is the world of our beliefs, of our grasped views, of our indulging our own, you know, likes and dislikes and trying to amplify the what we like and destroy or get rid of or downplay. This is a disturbed mind and a painful mind, a difficult way to live. And yet, here we are almost, I don't know, surely the vast majority of us in one way or another are caught up in such things. This way is freedom from that. And it does point to total freedom from this. Not that any of us can carry this out perfectly. I can't even after all these years, but that's what this is. To the extent that we can practice, truly practice this, and begin to live out of this. And the understanding and the realization and the knowing comes out of that. Last time I spoke here, I was talking about intimate knowledge. And it's intimate knowledge. It's no more mysterious than, you know, you have intimate knowledge of, say, the taste of orange juice. I use that as an example. Usually don't connect it with this idea of intimacy, that where the knowing that you have of it is such. And by the way, a characteristic of this kind of knowing is that you can't say anything about it. It isn't a view or an idea that you can grasp or hold or have, and yet it's pure knowing, knowing in the way you know orange juice, the taste of orange juice. And if you'll notice carefully, you will never be able to put that into words so somebody else can understand the taste of orange juice. They have to taste it themselves. But in the case of what this is about, this practice, this teaching is, you are immersed in truth, in reality, with a big R, truth with a big T. And not some idea of it, which would be the small R and the small T, some concept, something that you're holding in your mind, that you're promoting or you're trying to sell to others. Well, yeah, even if it's good or being caught in that kind of duality, goodness and badness and rightness and wrongness and all of that. That's not what this way is. This way is you're seeing the whole thing and you're learning not to take hold of any bit of it, because anytime you take hold of some little bit of it, there'll be contrast with it, and that'll be endless, an endless arguing or, you know, doubting yourself and all that kind of division that just goes on when there's, if we really believe in the two-ness or the multiplicity of it all. It's real enough, the differences and all that. But so we have these teachings like the merging of difference and unity. It's here. But how do you merge these two as difference? Well, that would seem separate now. And then there's unity, and that would seem to be, well, the opposite of this difference. But this way is, you know, the teaching is pointing to these themselves, difference and unity. Do you want to make that different? Well, then, no, so difference then wins and there isn't any unity? Or how about this unity? It's all together, we're all one. Sometimes we'll say things like this. Well, how can that be when we can see all this multiplicity and difference? So how is it? Well, this teaching, this practice is that we come to know in an intimate way. And it is, and you already have this knowledge. Because it is intimate, you are already with it. You are of this knowledge. It is there. And if you can learn to stop jabbering to yourself, you will see it, you'll hear it, you'll taste it, you'll feel it, you'll know it. You do know it already. But we're so noisy in our minds all the time, and we're reaching for this and that and trying to fix things. We're oblivious to this that we truly know and understand. So this is a practice, this is a way of just living out of that understanding. Even if at first now we don't know what we're just, okay, don't say anything, just sit on. Just practice. Do your job. Interact with your friends and family and whatever, even people who might be hostile to you. But do this. Don't forget about that wholesome mind. We can act out of that rather than, well, you're threatening me or whatever. You're, you know, or I want to bring you on board with it. We can just back off from all of that and settle down. And what you have to do is just, if you're learning anything in this way, it is you're learning about your craziness, your insanity, your need to, I feel like I have to have that in order for me to be fully expressed in this or that, yeah. Well, think of all those feelings you had like that as a teenager, say. As you get into more mature years, it's like, well, this isn't anything. When it meant so much to you at the time, it's just, oh, this is everything. And but your whole life is like that. It keeps moving on. Well, where do you suppose we are now? I mean, you look at, say, and it has nothing to do with even serious things like philosophies or going to war or whatever. But even just things like, say, fashion, something like that. We look back at how people dressed, say, in the 1950s or whatever, and how goofy that looks now. It's just crazy, you know. Well, wouldn't it have been just as crazy for them? But no, at the time, it's all very serious. You have to have the latest model of this or that. And that's fine, but to what degree are you going to allow yourself to get caught up in that? One of my students I was talking with earlier this week, he pointed out this fellow. I don't follow philosophy so much anymore, but was it Timothy Williamson? Was the modern day philosopher? He's pretty big right now, I guess. And he had solved the problem of the ancient problem. It goes all the way back to the Greeks, you know, the early Greeks, and the problem of the heap. I forget the technical name for that now. But, yeah, when is a heap a heap? You know, you take a grain of sand or just, say, a grain of rice and you put it on the table. Well, that's not a heap. And you add two and another one and, you know, that's not a heap. And then you just keep adding more. And when do you get to a heap? When is it a heap of rice? And so this is the paradox of the problem of the heap. And that's has been argued from the ancient Greeks all the way up till today. People are still arguing, but now apparently this fellow seems to have solved it. Really, are you kidding me? He does think, tracked a little bit of what he said, that apparently there is a number there somewhere where this isn't a heap, but you add one more, now you got a heap. And okay. But what we're not doing from the ancient Greeks until now, and you know, but that's what this practice is about. This is what we do now, is that you look at that. Can't you realize that this is a problem, a creation of our own thinking, our own grasping and views? Well, there must be, I mean, if it's a heap, then you're going to have a barrier there. In our conceptualizing, when we learn to just settle down and watch our own mind, you'll see where we'll draw barriers in our mind. Because we think there's an actual thing here. Say it's called a heap. And then we have someone else over here that's not a heap, you know. And so there must be a place. But in our conceptualizing manner, which is our grasping of the world and of the various things that will show up in our lives and that sort of thing. And by the way, this is what the consciousness from the Buddha's point of view. Nagarjuna, how they might view this. But this is what consciousness is. Is this drawing of these barriers, you know. Are there actual barriers here? You can't say there's an actual barrier. So then there's no barrier. No, you can't say there certainly looks like a barrier there, a division here, separation, yeah. So then there is one. No, you really can't try to find it. Try to find where the non-heap becomes a heap, you know. This is and you can multiply this by any other set of arguments that have gone on for thousands of years. And I remember when I was in college and studying philosophy and encountering this particular argument here. And it didn't take too long before I just started having this gut feeling of this is ridiculous. You know, this. And now come to see that pretty much everything that we embroil ourselves in, You know, is this the correct fashion for the day? And, you know, the things that we'll end up concerning ourselves with are things of this sort that, and we get so emotionally charged or riled up or angry or just, I have to get that, I have to do this. It's endless with us. All the while our minds are churning and disturbing. Okay, this way, this practice that the Buddha woke up to, and that we all can't, because it comes right out of yourself. Right out of, like I said, you already have this understanding and this knowing. But it's buried under all of this noise that we allow ourselves, to get embroiled in our minds all the time, without noticing that none of that ever gets settled, even after thousands of years over a tiny little problem like this, as if... Well, that's an important problem because we need to find, but hasn't it already shown us now abundantly that you're not going to pin down where that line is? Or even if there is a line, well, it has to be. Yeah, it looks like there has to be a line. Yeah, yeah. You'll never get hold of that. Yeah, so then you're saying there's no line there. I mean, if there's no line, but then it can't, and there'll be, we just keep going on with this. With everything that we do, everything that we allow ourselves to get embroiled in. The awakening that the awakened ones, have awakened to, those who truly have awakened to this, see through this. This is the freedom, that freedom is called nirvana. Then we get ideas about nirvana and run away with that. What exactly is nirvana? It's not some particular thing, but it is freedom. The mind can become free of getting caught in all of these things, right within your own mind, right here, because you'll see what is taking place here, and you'll know it in an intimate way. As you say, know the taste of orange juice that you can't explain now to somebody else, but you know it, and you know that you know it. This is it. But even more so, because that's about the taste of something here, as opposed to, we're talking about the whole thing. You know. It isn't even that you know or I know, because I is a divided thing. Here's me. Okay, I have no idea what that is. I know, but what knows? I could see that me doesn't refer to anything, or Steve doesn't refer to anything. And still, yet here Steve goes out and acts with me, I, you, you know. We go out into the world and interact. Yeah, okay, yeah. We can do that, okay. Are there things interacting there? Well, I can't really get hold of anything like that. So then there's not, well, no, certainly it seems to be things going on here. This is a place you can't describe. It's no more mysterious than why you can't describe orange juice, and yet that doesn't seem that mysterious to you, because you know this. This is about waking up to that you know the whole thing, except it isn't you that knows it, because knowing the whole thing, you won't find you or me, you know, as we see it from our own point of view. That's English. It's forcing us into that. It's English or Greek or whatever that forced us into arguing about this thing about the heap. We can see what's going on there. At some point, it seems like we have a heap of stuff here. When do you have a bushel full of rice, you know? How do you know? Is that a particular number? I mean, you know, how do you arrive at that? Do you shake the bushel container? Maybe you don't want those kind of wooden type of bushel, just get a box or something. Shiny, perfect steel, you know, and straight walls, and all, and get the exact size of a bushel. And then fill it with rice, even shake the rice a little bit. How are you going to arrive at the number of how many rice grains make a bushel? Of course, it's even kind of ridiculous to try this. And who would? I mean, for, you know. But still, this is the sort of thing that we try to do, and we think it has to be like this or it has to be like that. Oftentimes in systems and things that, you know, 10 years later, who cares even? You know, it's no longer the fad, whatever. But all the while this is happening, are we watching our own minds and realize where you are with this? This isn't to say don't do that, don't. No, we're in this world. We have to interact. You're going to be breathing and eating and living and talking and all of that. So here we are. But watch your mind. It can easily be dragged off by conversations you might have or just thoughts that might come up. But this way is just simply that. Observe that. Don't grasp it. You don't need to characterize yourself in some particular way. As I said, I don't think of myself as a Buddhist. I don't know exactly what that would mean. Besides that, if I were to say I'm a Buddhist to other people, you listening to me here now might have one kind of idea. We're out visiting with friends who, you know, kind of knows, you know, a bit about us, you know, and yet have no idea about what Buddhism means. And so if I say I'm a Buddhist, they said to me that I'm a Buddhist, you know. So, well, okay. I didn't have to make a big deal out of that. I could sort of see where they were. But then to think that, does that apply? What does that even mean? I'm a Buddhist. But if you want to say I'm a Buddhist, that's fine, you know. I remember my teacher, Katagiri Roshi, he said, what was it? Oh, a garbage can, I think, yeah. Somebody once said that a Zen teacher is like a garbage can. You can just throw all your trash into that, and you know, something like that. So somebody asked Roshi, are you a garbage can, you know, something, you know. But we just get into things like this. There's this man. He speaks in this way, he's, you know, but here he is, in this moment, now. Okay, do you have to characterize him in some way? It's just this. And some of these people we get to know pretty well, maybe over a period of time, and yet at the same time, suddenly they could surprise us with something they might do or say or whatever. You know, you can let it all be free. We don't need to be caught by any bit of it, and you don't need to identify in any particular way. That's why I don't really wear the robes when I give a talk. I guess often I put this on, but just rakusu. And then, am I making a statement by not wearing my robes? Well, if I am, I don't have anything in mind about that, and trying to make a statement, you know. I am, I suppose, making an effort not to confuse people. That's why I'm working on this Nagarjuna book, I suppose you could say, because he does a very fine job with that. But then, is that really what I'm trying to do? Well, I don't know. This is something I can do, and so I am doing it. But I don't have anything to say about it, to defend it or to argue with it, or will I complete it? You know, I don't know. I mean, I might die first, or I might just, I don't know, get tired of it. I don't know. I don't know if I'll complete it or not. Does that matter? Well, I don't know what to say there either. So much of it, I suppose I could start speculating on this and that, and once in a while, maybe it seems like, man, you better give this some thought. Yeah, okay, all right, so I'll give it some thought. But we can keep it kind of loose and free, and we don't have to allow ourselves to be embroiled in a lot of confusion, because that easily comes about. You know, look at the human world, and it is just filled. We now, as human beings, unlike other animals and plants and wildlife of any kind, we've gained such incredible power in our ability to manipulate the environment and do all sorts of things. In creating our bombs but what about our minds? Can we give a little attention to that? Just see what we're doing. Drop the judgment and saying, well, that's bad stuff. You know, just see it for what it is. The things that are going to embroil us in kind of dangerous ways, but just see that for what that is. And see if you yourself can, you don't have to step into that. You might have to deal with it some way, but you don't need to be caught up in it. And don't lose sight of the whole. And then maybe I could just end with this line by John Keats, where he said, truth is all you know and all you need to know. But that's truth with a capital T. Truth is all you know and all you need to know. And if it's a small t truth, this is what we think, you know. Or even that there's a cushion on the floor there. Yeah, we can say, well, that's true, that's true. Well, we can actually start to argue with something like that, a small t truth. And that's going to embroil us once again in this confused world. We can just see that for what it is. We don't have to, that's a good thing or a bad thing. It just, we can see what it is. You don't have to say, you don't have to characterize it in any particular way. I mean, you can, you know. It took me a long time when I first finally woke up to this way, what it truly was, after practicing it for more than 10 years in a formal way. And when I really started to realize, and I also realized I can't say anything. My teacher wanted me to give talks. And I told him I can't say anything. And then he said, you have to say something. And nobody will understand if you don't say anything, you know. So you have to say something. Okay, so we have to, and not just with stuff like that, but just, you know, cooking dinner, you know, for your partner or whatever, friends, and just different, we have to say things, you know. But we can also continue to watch our mind and to realize when we're kind of sliding off into speculation here, or some kind of division, setting one thing off from another, or thinking that they truly are set off from another, if we're losing sight of the whole. This is a way where we can come back to this, and yes, we can interact, we can speak, we can. You might find that you have less to say, but that's okay. So maybe we could be a little more quiet and settled. But the freedom that is with that, the fresh air, you know, that it brings, that it is, this is what we know, this is what we truly know. Truth is what we know, capital T truth, not the small t. We don't really know that, we think that, we believe that, the small t. Capital T truth is what we truly know. There's nothing you can say about that, but you know it, and you do know it. Even as we all sit here, you know this. So this way, what it is that we, with enlightenment, it isn't that you finally gain some idea of the right way of whatever. No, it's finally you see what you're engaged in here, and what you're doing. You see this mind that you might otherwise call your mind. And backed out of that knowledge, out of that direct knowing. And this is truth. Truth is what you know. Capital T truth is what you know, and all you need to know. Keats said, truth is beauty, and beauty is truth, and that's all you know. Yes, that's pretty good. Truth is beauty, but even John Keats is brilliant and wonderful, as it's old to a Grecian urn. Beautiful as that is, wonderful as it is, liberating as it is, still, truth is, see, the small t truth, yeah, is, we could say, is beauty. But now we've introduced things, and now we can begin to, well, have our philosophical arguments or whatever that can go on for thousands of years. And that's fine. But at any moment, we can step back and look at that picture. Look at any of it. And we don't have to say, we don't have to say this or that. Well, maybe I've said enough. Do you have any questions or arguments about anything I'm saying here? Yes? Okay.
We talk about being a Buddhist, just in relation to that, I just recently read across a quote by Krishnamurti, he said, the reason why we have Buddhism is because no one listened to Buddhism.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Buddha didn't set out to create Buddhism. If we understood the Buddha, yeah, we wouldn't have made Buddhism. And again, that's what Nagarjuna is doing. 500 years after the time of the Buddha, Nagarjuna came along, and the teachings by that time were getting very convoluted and mixed and scattered and combined and all of this. It was a real confused mess, in a way, you could say. And still, that goes on today. But Nagarjuna came in there and cut through this and clarified it. Now, and as I'm looking at the different translations, I'm working with quite a few different translations, and there's problems with it. That if Nagarjuna had the mind of Buddha, and I would say, yeah, I don't argue with that, but if that were the case, then some of the things that end up coming out in the translation is just ordinary thought. And that's why I want to write this book, to help clarify that a bit. So, but yeah, I've heard that before with Krishnamurti when he said that, yeah, and I thought, yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. Anytime you have an ism, my teacher would speak that way too. And he didn't like the term Buddhism. He said, that's just an ism. It's just another one of the isms. Because he knew better. I was lucky I had a good teacher who had more than ordinary understanding of Buddhism. And it helped me to cut through anyway. And is that okay, Don? Did I answer your question or respond properly?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was just wondering if you made that comment that you brought up about people think you're a Buddhist or not or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can let people think whatever. They think I'm a Buddhist or they think this or that. They think, some people think I believe in Buddha. I have no idea what that means. Same thing with God. I have no idea. You believe in God? I have no idea what we're talking about. I don't have any ideas about that. And we don't need to. And again, John Keats is in that. Anything else? Yes?
I was interested in what you were saying. Kagiri Roshi said he was a trash can, or his son is a trash can.
Oh, somebody, if I remember this, and this is getting kind of vague in my mind now, but yeah, somebody referred to, I don't know, to him, or if it was just Zen teachers in general, that they're just a trash can. That I do remember people speaking of, not necessarily using those terms, but they would approach Katagiri. He was the head of the Minnesota Zen Center. He founded that, and that's where I got to know him. But people would say, oh, yeah, your problems, you just bring it to Roshi, and, he'll take care of it for you, he'll compost it for you, whatever. that's his role, that's what he is, you know. And, okay, that's a belief, that's an idea you have, yeah. And so in the category, at some point he says, yeah, you can call me a trash can. in the way that he would be, what a Zen teacher is, he didn't say, yes, that's correct, that's what you. But yeah, you want to call me a trash can, that's fine. He would answer to that, So we didn't call him a trash can. But we. Oh, no.
Just like there to compost. I mean, I've heard the metaphor of, you said that burns your ego away. So I kind of like the trash metaphor.
Oh, sure, yeah. And we can use metaphor and things like that. But not lose sight of, what we really have here, you can't pin it down. We can fully know it, understand it, realize it, see it, in reality itself, not its, well, I was going to say its reality. Well, you can see that too, but maybe. But there, now you can make mistakes with that kind of stuff. But we can see this all fully. And as long as you don't try to get hold of any bit of it, you'll understand it perfectly. It's only when we try to get hold of this or that that now there's danger. That's why I said there's danger when my opening statement, when I said I don't believe in God. I'm just announcing something I don't believe. I didn't give you what I do believe. So, because you might think, but then Steve does believe that there's no God. No, because then later I pointed that out to him. No, I don't believe that either. I mean, I don't. I try not to hold views. I'm going to say I don't hold views. Yeah, momentarily I'll catch myself hanging on to something. Yeah, but that's what I'm watching for. Particularly if I start to go very far with that. Watch it, Steve. You know better than this. So that's all this is. So it's not a matter of, the label's going on or not. Is it a correct label? And what would that be exactly? No, there's room for argument now. But most of us, go through life at every turn arguing about what's fashionable and what isn't in any kind of area. We have things there that will constantly take us away and take us away and take us away. If we're interested in waking up, realize what it is that these enlightened people have seen. Just recognize what you're doing. You're doing things that are keeping you from seeing that, because you do see it. It's there already. The reality. We're living it out. You know it directly, reality, with a capital R. We all do. How could you not? That's all we're living out, is reality with a capital R. But the moment we get our ideas about it, our interpretation, now we're taking a little piece of it, we're defining it, and then we're saying, oh, this is a little different from that over here. And we'll spend all our time with that, and that's illusory, that whole thing. And delusion is when we buy that, when we get caught up in that. And most of us are entangled and caught up in delusion continuously. And it's painful and difficult, scary. I've lost some very dear friends recently, and it's very, very painful to see that when you're confused about what this is, and death comes around. Of course, we all know that it's kind of hanging out there for us somewhere. When we're young, maybe we would hope it's a ways off, but it'll get you. It's coming, But sooner or later, sometimes it just takes us, we don't even realize what we're hit with, and we're gone. Or we lose a loved one that way or something. But there's always, in this world of the stuff that we will grip and take hold of, that's where pain, sorrow, confusion, mystery, the whole bit, all of that stuff is there. Sometimes it's, ooh, that's fun, I like that, I like to be scared in this way or whatever. Yeah, we can play with that. But in the end, that's kind of serious stuff for us. And sooner or later we'll face it. We do a lot to distract ourselves from it, so we don't have to look at that or think about it. But if we learn to really settle down, and you do see the whole thing, it is available to you, always. Once we open up to that and see that, and what is that? Well, that's pretty much dropping away of everything you've ever been holding on to. Let that drop away. It doesn't actually drop away, but loosen the grip, let go of the grip of it. It'll sort of drop, and then it still hangs there. A lot of it will just evaporate. So it isn't like to do away with our conceptual view of things. No, we need that. We can't, to function as a human being in this world, we have to have that. So it isn't like destroying that or getting rid of it. But we don't have to be caught by it. We don't have to be entangled in it. See? And so this is the difference. And what this way, the way of the Buddhas, Nagarjuna, others, Dogen, those people who have awakened to this and understand this way, this is what they try to point out to us. There's a lot of people that get involved with this and get caught up with it, and they'll start setting up rules and things. But the point is, we don't have to live by rule and dictums and things like that. We're talking about total freedom of mind. Did I answer you there? Okay. Yeah, thank you. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.